Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Gavin Emmett, and this is the BT Sport MotoGP podcast. Today, I'm joined by Keith Ewan and Julian Ryder. We're in Motegi ahead of round 15 of the season. Of course, in Japan, four rounds to go, and we could have a MotoGP world champion by the end of the weekend. First match point for Marc Marquez. Quite exciting. We know the maths on it. It's a bit of a long shot. It could happen. But Marquez is back in form, back on the top step of the podium for the first time in a few races, his fourth win of the season, first time he's won in Spain for a long time as well, and he comes here now to the home of Honda, and will he actually be thinking of taking home the trophy by the end of the weekend?
Well, he's already been crowned a world champion here before, hasn't he? He's had the full samurai affair, but he's never won a race here, never won a MotoGP race here. Sorry, he has won a 125 and a Moto2 race here, but never won a MotoGP race, so that's still yet to be clicked up, ticked off on the Marquez list. But could he win a world title here? Tell you what, the Honda, you wouldn't expect it, would
not
you?
Here, not with up.
But if I can, Jules,
go on.
How smooth did he look last time round?
Impeccable.
He looked completely different on the bike last time out at Aragon, and that just makes me worry for everyone else.
Yeah. Let's see if I can sum it up quickly. For Marquez to be champion on Sunday, he must win. Rossi must be out of the points and Lorenzo must be off the podium.
So it'll be Phillip Island then, not Motegi.
Well, that's what you'd say, wouldn't you? Yamaha haven't won a race since Barcelona. So are we looking at a Ducati win again?
About it, yeah. Well, what about
you
Ducati?
Think it'd be set up for Ducati as well, wouldn't it, this weekend? We'll get onto that in a second, but just to get back onto Marquez, just to finish off, what about the season he's put together? You know, it's the consistency we talked about from him.
Well, we looked at the sheets earlier on before we came on air for this podcast, didn't we, Gav? And you said, God, he's only won four rounds and he's leading. I mean, he won five rounds last year and didn't win a world title. I mean, it's quite an interesting, when you go through the statistics of it, when you look at the spreadsheet of wins and points scored, I mean, it has just underlined the fact that he has taken every single point he could take whenever it was possible, rather than throw it at the fence.
Scarily, he's done exactly what he said he'd do at the end of last year, which is, knowing the motorcycle probably wouldn't be up to the job of winning every race, therefore I will take fourth when it's necessary. And he's done it.
See, that's the maturity of a 23-year-old.
Yeah. That's scary. Well,
it was interesting to hear comments by Mick Doohan, who obviously was a bit later coming into... He just said you can see the maturity now of Marquez shining through this year. You mentioned it there briefly. At the beginning of the season, we were talking about that Honda probably couldn't win the championship. That's what we were saying. Yet it is leading by a comfortable margin. He needs just 49 points between now and Valencia, irrespective of the results, and he'll be champion. Have Honda made strides this year? Has the Yamaha not made any?
Well, let's analyse that even further. At the end of the day, Honda's the one that's getting all the stick for being a motorbike that you can't ride in the light, and yet there's three riders that have won Grand Prix on it this year, with Jack Miller and Cal Crutchlow, of course, and Marc Marquez, and in fact, there's four riders, including Danny Pedrosa. How do we always forget about Danny?
I know. Two of those wins in the wet.
Yeah, you can put that extra little...
Just a little caveat.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. There's still been four different Honda riders.
Couldn't agree more. All the Honda teams have won.
So that horrible motorcycle that doesn't do whatever they want it to do is still...
It's not as bad as last year, is it? They've learnt and they've got somewhere with the specification software of taming the engine and getting rid of some of the unpleasant habits.
The electronics of the Michelin is all new to them all this year.
Of course.
At the end of the day, that combination of electronics, tyres and performance...
It's taken some dialing in. Really,
it has taken some dialing in.
You could argue that Yamaha have had it worse, couldn't you? With Jorge Lorenzo and the front Michelin unable to...
Yeah, but didn't they have a little bit of an inroads with Ford? They ran the the early ECUs with Forward Racing and Colin Edwards. If you remember, Colin hated it.
Yeah.
Whereas
absolutely
teammate Aleix got on with it okay. So I think Yamaha had in their independent team just that little bit extra lead into it, whereas Honda almost resolutely said, "No, we're not having none of this."
Their open bikes never really performed. They weren't, you know, they weren't even up to full spec of the engine and, and things like that.
They weren't relevant indeed.
Just mention, you talk about Danny Pedrosa there. We almost forgot about him, but he's got the best record of anyone here at this
three
circuit.
Wins here?
Yeah. Well, he came from Julian. Actually, was the first. I'd love to have laid claim to it. We were arguing about it on the way in the car earlier on. He said, "Well, you can see from lap 10." I said, "But yeah, but you saw it from 12 laps in that he was actually coming from behind." He looked really quick early on, and Jules doing his studying of the stats on the monitor.
Last year's race.
Yeah, last year's race. He came through clearly with pace, tyres and everything that worked perfectly for him.
Because he was a long way behind.
But
made up the ground, didn't he? Had a shocker, though, last time. We saw photos of his front tyre from Aragon. And that was where the soft tyre didn't work in Danny's favour. Or not the soft, he's at pains to point out. Isn't a soft tyre, it's a medium, still as the medium tyre, but different kind of construction on that front tyre. But it didn't work, did it, at Aragon
at all? Not at all. That was a classic tyre failure.
It's been another reason why this year has been so varied and we've had so many different winners, that the tyres that Michelin bring every single weekend are very fractionally slightly different from before. And I think every time it's a voyage of discovery. I mean, I've got to say, this weekend with the things that we've got to yet get done in this podcast, I mean, really, really interesting this weekend again. There's another level of excitement.
Am I wrong to have a bit of a Ducati feeling over me?
No, you're
again,
not. That, well, you know where I was leading with that. And
that's why I'm leaping in.
It was absolutely right. I mean, Ducati, this weekend, we could have something a little bit special.
But last time out, remember, there was no Ducati in the top 10 even. They all had tyre problems. But this circuit, as you mentioned, is quite stop-start. Basically, it's all about acceleration and good braking, which is where that Ducati seems to work in that straight line. No Iannone, though. He's been replaced by Hector Barbera.
The news that's coming now. Hector Barbera gets
And I'm
going to
let you do it,
right.
Keith, because you did actually bring this up for me earlier.
Only because I've been in the IRTA office before everyone else this morning, first thing. It's nothing to do
getting
with
Getting a
me.
Cup of tea.
So Hector Barbera's moved onto Andrea Iannone's bike for the weekend, alongside Andrea Dovizioso, by virtue of being the top non-factory Ducati in the championship.
I think he's going to give us a shock this week.
Hey, I think he could have a good weekend. You never know about him. But he's been replaced in Avintia.
By a bloke you know well.
Yeah. Mad Mike Jones.
I think what it is, you read it as well. Mad Mike is his handle. Mike Jones is 2015 Australian Superbike champ on a Ducati. But the fact that nobody that I spoke to this morning, having got this first bit of news first thing this morning, I went around everybody and said, "You heard of Mike Jones?" No. It just goes
Hand
to show.
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't familiar.
I hadn't. I don't think he's done the 8 hour. I don't think he's done the.
But for me, the state of the Australian Championship, that we are not absolutely in touch with what's going on instantaneously. Yeah. It's incredible, really. Yeah. But Mike Jones, Mad Mike Jones, is joining Avintia.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear you guys. It's tough. I think more than anything, it's looking towards Phillip Island.
Iannone isn't
back for that one. They found a bit of a complication with his injury. And if he's not back, a lot of people were expecting Stoner, but it seems like he's knocked it back again and again.
I'm a bit concerned about this retrospective medical stuff that we're getting a lot of lately. Mm. You know, there's Iannone who probably shouldn't have ridden back when he was injured earlier. I think he should have taken more time off.
Well, he did the first practice, didn't he, last time?
Yeah.
And then said, look, it's too much pain.
Yeah.
He found more damage up in his...
But then we move on to the more complicated subject of Petrucci and that loss of memory that he had. And of course, it quite rightly, there was a whole raft of really interesting tweets and Facebook and all the other social media stuff that Digital Dan loves around here. But all that then unloaded a whole load of comment from all the different sports. I mean, from my perspective, because I was involved in cars for a while, a lot of car people, you know, Marino Franchitti got involved, Dario Franchitti's brother. You know, he said, well, how on earth was he ever allowed to have ridden with a memory loss? Admittedly, on the day, he hadn't admitted to it until we did the interview with him on BT Sport. But then it was clear. But it seemed that nobody really seems to have known how to react to that within MotoGP at this point. And that's the point worth highlighting.
Because he apparently had all the checks and he had the medical checks and they did the tests for it. But clearly one of those wasn't...
Well, there are. Again, I was asked by the car guys who have very strict head injury tests.
What's the protocol?
But I asked the doctors to them, and they said we have the same protocols as you will find in American football, as you will find in Formula One. We have those. We have them in place.
Well, I have to say then, in that case, something fell out of bed because there was something not right there.
Yeah.
What I particularly liked, and it was one of my Twitter followers who actually fired it into us first of all, and I didn't realise this was fairly normal in rugby and other things. They have G-force monitors.
Yes.
They have as earpieces in cars. They have so you can measure the G-force. As soon as the G-force has been over a certain amount, you automatically on the sidelines.
In gum shields, in rugby and ice
in their
hockey.
Shirts as well.
Yep, in ice hockey, where a lot of research has been done in Canada on concussion, fairly obviously. If you've seen the professional ice hockey game, you'll know why they're concerned about it
So effectively, there is the technology out there at the right price available that should be... I think my Twitter man, he turned around and said, well, can't they fit one of these things in a helmet so you know what the G-force of the helmet has been? But apparently there's things that can be even more personally fitted to a rider if that's what you deem as a new piece of technology. And I think it is a piece of technology that should be invested in MotoGP.
I agree completely.
Yeah, and obviously he took out Scott Redding on lap one as well, claimed there was a problem with the bike. However, in their little battle towards who will get that GP 17 bike next year, obviously they're counting up the points from the last race to the end of the season, and whoever gets most in theory will get that bike. They've given Scott Redding the points from ninth place.
The team have said
right, we're counting that, you were taken out of ninth, we've given you that. So that sort of says to me maybe there wasn't such a problem with the bike. So it's all a little bit
he's got form for that a bit, hasn't he? Just think Eugene wasn't particularly
well
best
Eugene
happy.
Tweeted didn't he said I think they should invoke a new rule, 1 meter
exclusion zone.
Eugene Laverty, we're talking about teammate of course, and it's going to be a tricky one, isn't it, I think, at the end of the day, for this concussion thing, and we shouldn't make light of it at the end of the day.
No, because it's long-term.
It's the really, very recent science on the mechanism of concussion and cumulative effects, and we very much need to take it seriously in this sport.
I just want to get back to the championship and Yamaha. Lorenzo and Rossi are now realistically, we'd say, battling for second position in the championship. I want to ask you, Keith, was P2 ever something a rider was bothered about?
P2 never is the first loser at the end of the day. I think
but will they, though? Lorenzo and Rossi...
That is a different dynamic. Yeah. That's a different dynamic. Between those two...
What you're saying is the placings doesn't actually matter.
It's the rider
beating your teammate matters.
Absolutely does.
It could be for 7th and 8th. They don't care.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a bit of a storm brewing at the moment because while Jorge Lorenzo is being allowed to test at Valencia for Ducati, a later test at Jerez, a private test later on in the month, Yamaha have said, this is the reports anyway, the Yamaha said he won't be able to test.
Well, this is the gentleman's agreement effectively, isn't it, between teams. They're contracted right up to the 31st of December, which allows them to do all the PR and all the stuff that they need to do with the team. If you're a world champion, really you want to be able to capitalise on all of that press and PR that you're going to get right up to Christmas, and then the new year starts and you're in a new contract. But the gentleman's agreement has always been that moving riders were allowed to test, especially at Valencia. But the fact that Yamaha have been quite so hard, they've said, well, we did that with Valentino, he was allowed to test in Valencia, but not after that. But there's a bit of disingenuous conversation and media hype going on here as well, I believe, in that Valentino Rossi had an operation after so he couldn't test either. And the testing procedures in those years that we're talking about previously were much tighter than they are now. It's a different situation. We have a winter ban now, but so it's kind of, it's not like for like when people
not
say
quite,
that.
Not quite.
So do we think something's happened there?
I think there's obviously been some friction, and Yamaha have... It's the Japanese way of extracting revenge. It's not aggressive or up front or outside. It's just no. The answer is no, sorry. That's it.
But he's testing at Valencia still.
Which, that's not a surprise.
No, that's the test after. But that, you wonder how valuable that might be for Jorge Lorenzo. And I mean, the fact is that for them to have blocked that off, that would have broken the again, you're talking about the Japanese, that's a gentleman's agreement that the Valencia they're allowed to test. Yeah. But it could set a precedent for the future. In all changeovers, all MotoGP riders, they could find themselves banned from these private tests because of this.
And Maverick Vinales is getting to test a couple of times on, the Yamaha from his release from, not release, Suzuki, but been in his Suzuki contract as well. Interesting. A Twitter question I'm going to fire at you. Can you see Lorenzo winning again this season, giving his state of mind and the tracks remaining?
I don't think you can ever write Lorenzo off. I think, of course, not. He's one of those guys. This state of mind thing, it makes good PR. Yeah, we have a bit of a giggle with it, but you know, when things are right, yes, he needs stuff. He needs his ducks in a row, doesn't he, really, to make it work perfectly for him.
But sports on that level, they can have an appalling weekend, one weekend, and that is compartmentalised and
I just wonder,
done with by the time they get here.
Yeah, he beat Rossi last time out. In Aragon, fair and square, he finished ahead of him. Is he right back in the game now? He is, isn't he?
He's back,
and he likes this place.
There's a proper fight on for second in the championship. Oh. Or sorry, what was it? There's a proper fight on for top Yamaha in the championship.
I'm quite interested, really, in again moving away from that to an extent, back to the Ducati thing for next year. Let me ask you two a question. I mean, can you see Jorge Lorenzo riding a Ducati as is at this moment in time? Will he get on with that Ducati? Because that, for me, if I might just preempt that, just looks impossible from where I'm sat at the moment. His style, the way he's got... Ducati have got a huge amount of work to do to get that bike to work for Jorge Lorenzo.
But has he not just had that style? This is what I would always say, and you can, you know, I'm sure you'll disagree with me in some way. Because, but I feel that he's had that style because that's what that bike has allowed him to have. You know, it was a very usable bike from when he stepped on it in 2008. Rossi had made it into this, and he's just kept that going, and perhaps a bit more to how he'd like to ride a bike. But he's not a multi-world champion for no reason, and he's a fantastic rider who can probably get the best out of any bike. I don't know. That's my opinion.
I'm not going to disagree with you, strangely enough. No, and I think that you're right. He is a fantastic rider, but just the way that he rides a motorcycle just seems to be at odds at every person I've spoken to that rides a Ducati.
I can see both sides of this very easily. The bike at the moment, I think it doesn't look right for Jorge, does it? This is what you're saying. But the history between Gigi Dall'Igno and Jorge Lorenzo, going back to the days of the 250 Aprilia, I would argue Gigi understands what Jorge needs.
And you speak to Jorge and he says, I ride like Iannone. We're very similar in the way that we ride with lots of corner speed compared to Dovizioso, who's very much a straight up and down breaker, likes to get it turned quickly and fire it
and
out.
And they've brought Gabarini in as well.
Yes.
Who's got huge form with Casey Stoner going back with that Ducati as well. Gabarini, they've swapped him back in.
And so. As we keep saying, sport is...
in the head.
At this level is north of the eyebrows, and if Jorge has Gabarini, he has Gigi, he has confidence.
It's going to be exciting, isn't it, to see how he gets on.
Can't wait to see...
That's why that test, maybe Yamaha getting to the point of the Yamaha block on him testing, maybe they feel that he will get on with the Ducati. Maybe they feel that they just want to block that off.
They see him as a threat for next year.
Yeah, well, that's my point.
I mean, that's an easy argument. Why has it been happening? Well, because... We want to give ourselves the best chance of winning next season. Oh, simple as that, really. And why shouldn't it be? They've got him under contract. They can do what they like, really. Gentlemen's agreements come what may. Talking about Maverick Vinales being allowed to test the Yamaha, what about him? Fourth place last time out, very aggressive at the start of the race. Is there a chance of him winning one before the end of the year? Suzuki, perhaps, to go well?
Phillip Island.
Yeah, Phillip
Island. In my book.
I can't argue with that. So.
Yeah, he'll be relishing. I think a lot of people will be relishing that race. It's one of those that they all love going there. What Motegi in comparison, one, I don't think it has so much favour with the riders, does it?
No, it's a weird old place to come to anyway. I mean, I think the Aussies obviously like it here because it's the first time they haven't got to travel as far as usual. But I don't know, Motegi, it's a strange round. I'm glad it's on the calendar.
Hardest braking track on the whole MotoGP calendar as well. This is where they originally brought those higher mass discs. Just a quick word on...
Yamahas go well round here.
Well, it is the home round. It might be owned by Honda, but this is the home round for the Japanese. It's slightly strange.
Just again, the Yamaha is a great all-round motorcycle, of course, so I shouldn't be surprised, should I?
I just want a quick word on Cal Crutchlow quickly. He was fifth last time out. He's having a good season after that first part. If we can forget the first four races.
He's having
races,
a good second half of the season, Gav.
Or mid-part as well.
I think it's life according to Cal at the moment. Every time you see Cal is not a different Cal, because Cal behind the scenes is nowhere near as the abrasive little what's-it that you might think of him as. I mean, Cal is basically a nice guy. And I think settling with new baby Willow, family side of things, got that win out of the way. You know, finally got that. It's a real monkey off your back. Got that win. The other thing is, he'll now realise, does life completely revolve around, you know, 100%? Have I got to be this intense little monkey that I am most of the time to achieve what I want to achieve? And I think Cal, when you see him in the hire car queue, when you see him at the airport lounge, he's nowhere near on edge like he perhaps would have been prior.
He's always been a different person outside the paddock from inside it.
Indeed he has, but he does seem, everywhere you see him, to be miles more relaxed.
So is he a front runner for these last races?
He's a front runner for any race.
I think that's what he's achieved this year. He's actually achieved.
Bridged the gap, hasn't he?
He has bridged the gap.
Which is what Lossie said about winning a race. You join a very special club. Mm. And some switch goes in the head of any sportsman who wins for the first time at the very top level. You might have thought you could do it. You might have believed you could do it. But now you know you can do it.
And speaking of race winners, Jack Miller's back this weekend. Again, always. Because he had the flight over from Australia and he's got a new, nice new ute that he's got himself sorted out. So he's in good mood.
I've just spent his time well then.
But he's back. He's still got a big old lump on his hand. He's back. And also Bradley Smith. We get to see Bradley back on the bike. That's going to be tough, isn't it, for Bradley?
Has anybody seen him in the paddock yet?
Not yet. I'm amazed he's back.
Neil Hodgson is currently out with him out on track.
Well, that'll ruin him.
Yeah. So, but by all accounts, he's asking his knee to hold up. Really, more than anything.
Maybe he's looking forward to Phillip Island. You know, it'd be interesting to see how that rolls out. I mean, that was a fairly large old injury he had.
It was.
The amount of soft tissue he did on that and the like. I mean, that's going to be painful. That is going to hurt.
Yeah.
Far worse than breaking your tib and fib.
I think he'd have preferred that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole
thing. Standard sportsman's line. You know, breaking a long bone is always a bit theatrical and rather unpleasant, but it sure as heck beats ligaments and soft tissue damage.
Yeah, indeed.
We'll move on to Moto2 quickly.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed your breakfast.
It's got tight, hasn't it? Zarco now just a point ahead of Alex Rins. Both of them having a tough weekend in Aragon. Sam Lowe's winning there. Yeah. He's 40 points back, loves this place, loves Phillip Island.
We've got a game on still. The good thing about that is, A, he believes, Sam I'm talking about, and the fact is he's got nothing to do other than to win races. Yep. He's not got to consider anything else. And that is such a lovely position to be in. I know he'd prefer to be leading, of course you would. But the position he's in just means get out there, do the best you can.
So do you think he's back in the title challenge?
I can see him going to Valencia still mathematically in with a chance. And if you go to the last round, in with a chance.
We're going to be getting out the record sheets to see who's performs the best in Valencia, aren't we? I can see that.
But this weekend, the Zarco-Rins battle, that's intriguing because they finished just a place apart.
They've both been a bit strangled, haven't they, the last couple of races for various reasons.
So is Zarco in that neutral position or are things getting to his head again?
Well, Zarco, I mean, the beginning of his year wasn't anything like what it should have been with Zarco.
It's a 34-point gap that Rins has pulled back on him.
Exactly.
Since then. So he had the bad start, great part of the season running up to the halfway
Rins,
point.
Rins can be up and down like a yo-yo as well. Yeah. It's going to be one of them. This weekend is really going to, we're going to see.
Ask us again on Sunday, Gav. We might have an answer. Yeah.
That's not the point of a preview.
I think Sam Lowe's is in a good position with those two not being quite as...
I'm very happy about Sam's position in this championship.
And a second win of the year. That's another
now,
thing.
Now, this is progress year by year. His first year in the class, one win. So his first year on the bike, one win. And now a double winner. And I would not bet against him being at least a triple winner by the end of the year. And that's the progress you need to see in your rider.
Go on then. Who are we backing? Who's going to win?
Here?
This weekend and the end of the championship. At this point.
Moto2?
Yeah.
I think Zarco will recover.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but I don't think it's going to be easy.
I think Rins is going. I get the feeling at the moment there's a lot of that pressure building.
If it goes
on,
to Valencia, then Rins. If it goes to Valencia, Rins. Then Rins. But
Rins also puts pressure on himself, though, and I think the interview that I did last time out I asked him, "Cards on the table, are you going
to
win?"
I'd like to congratulate his mother for managing to pray through the entire race at Aragon as well. That was remarkable.
The longest sermon I've ever seen or ever been witness to.
Right, Moto3. We've already had one world champion this year, Brad Binder. He's looked peerless all year, hasn't he?
I wouldn't be surprised if he cleaned up the rest of them either.
And you speak to people at KTM and they say there is more there. He's almost had to ride within himself to make sure that the title's brought home nice and early. He's got four races, like a free pass for these last four races.
Yeah, do you know what though? I'd have a little bet that he won't he won't do any more than he was capable of doing anyway. That sounds like a ridiculous comment to make because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But let me try and explain it. In as much as that, as a rider, I've won championships in the past where you think, right, I can do whatever I want to do now. I can go out and just win, go flat out, throw it at the fence. You never seem to be able to do more than you can do.
Yeah.
Because does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Anyway. You would do with your maximum anyway.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if you know, he's going to get what he gets anyway in the last four rounds.
That's a very good point.
What about Akiayo bringing home that title? Having missed out in the last few years, whether it's been with Jack Miller, Miguel Oliveira, whether it's been Luis Salom over the years. I think it was Cortese was the last world champion he had. So finally, he's cemented his position
in
as
Moto
being,
3,
that's the team of Moto 3.
Yep, and he's the reigning champion Moto 2 as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing, just to deviate, Binder in Moto 2.
With Akiayo.
With Akiayo on
the KTM. Yeah,
that
was KTM.
I've just spoken to Miguel Oliveira about it now, actually. I've just seen him. He's back this weekend, by the way, in Moto 2 after missing out with a collarbone injury. And he says how much he's looking forward. He says, I'm really just keeping time till I can get on that bike. Looking forward to it so much. Those two pairing up again for next season will be exciting. Right, in Moto 3, though, are we going to get anyone else challenging Brad before the end of the season?
We're going to get
Navarro.
Bastianini needs to win a race, doesn't he?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to, isn't he?
I think so, yeah. Phillip Island.
The form in the second half of the year, Rostrum's front rows everywhere, but not the win. He's got to break that duck.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Bastianini do it. Right, thank you very much, guys. Make sure that you download our review podcast following the race here in Japan. And remember, you can watch every session with us live this weekend, all on BT Sport 2. Get the coffees at the ready.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.